Joining us this morning, Tim Balcom, president of Shaw Industries. Tim, great to have you with us.
Great to be with you, Dave. Thank you for this virtual opportunity to get connected.
Well, this has changed everything. It certainly has for me. And I'll have to say I like it, and I suspect it's changed a lot at Shaw Industries.
It really has. I can't say that it's something that we're glad we're having to learn new skills, but it certainly forces us to do things differently, and that's always exciting.
Well, I guess this whole coronavirus lockdown, again, not only changed in terms of communication, but changed in terms of just about everything. Talk about the whole lockdown from Shaw's standpoint. And I guess the most important part is getting back to normal and how that's going to look.
You know, I think, Dave, it's really been something that is consuming all of our time. I mean, we're doing things where we used to plan on a quarterly or monthly basis. It seems like it's a daily or weekly basis now. It's just so dynamic. I think as we talk about COVID, we really have to take these three points of view, maybe starting first with consumers and end users, and then how do we react to it, and how do we help our customers, you know, react to it. You know, I think when it first came out, you know, it seems forever ago, 90 days ago or so, all of us were a little bit locked down because it was a novel situation. I think I've read somewhere that the difference between uncertainty and risk is data. We didn't know enough about it, so we're dealing with uncertainty, and uncertainty just kind of paralyzes you. But as more data gets layered in, you start understanding more, and you can convert that uncertainty to risk. And let's face it, business is about managing and mitigating risk all the time. So we're now seeing consumers going through that same journey. They have different levels of comfort with the knowledge that they have, with the risk they're willing to take. But I think it's safe to say now, 90 to 120 days into it, we know we have to operate in a middle ground. Society cannot afford to shut down completely, but society can also not just ignore the CDC guidelines and just rush back as if everything's the same. So this trend really sets the stage for everything. It feels like society is comfortable with a steady range of cases, but surges, you know, jolt people again. And these surges is what impacts people's confidence to shop, return to work, send their kids to school, visit older family members, let people in their homes, those types of things. And that's certainly not the same everywhere. So at Shaw, we're dealing with it that same way. You know, we've always had a steady focus on safety, a culture of safety, a culture of risk mitigation. We have had the advantage that we've remained an essential industry throughout all this. So we've been operating with this and learning as we go. We quickly adhered to the CDC guidelines and married those into our Shaw safety systems. So we started early on practicing social distancing, enhanced hygiene. We changed our processes through the flow to create more space, plexiglass separations where we needed to, contract tracing and isolating. From a sales standpoint, we took our salespeople off the road early on, trained them on things like Zoom and how to contact their customers differently. We, after about 6 weeks, let them cautiously go back into the market, though we're still not flying around. We've limited outside visitors, limited travel, tried to keep groups small. We've been very impressed with how agilely we've been able to pivot to this work-at-home environment. That's really worked better than we thought. And then you can extend that further to the consumers. You know, early on, they didn't have, many of them in some areas, even access to go into specialty stores that were closed. They're now starting to reopen with guidelines, and we're helping our customers communicate how to both be safe, but also express to the customer that you're safe. In fact, we're emphasizing and helping our customers emphasize appointments either in store or in home. Early on, we saw home centers gain a little share because they were able to stay up through the whole thing. And maybe customers were trying to limit shopping trips. But now as customers are getting more comfortable, we're seeing them going back into small retailers with an abandon. You know, even the home centers were limiting early on in-home installations and in-home measurements, but they're back in a more normal pace at this point. So COVID continues to be a very dynamic situation, but it feels like every day we're getting a little better handle on this, what I sometimes call next normal.
What about demand throughout this whole lockdown and this whole COVID situation? How has that been?
You know, it's interesting. And this thing has shifted three times. In the end of the first quarter, there was a fear of supply. As we went into April, there was a crisis of demand. And now we're kind of wrestling with recovery. So when we looked at late March, because of both the impact of the virus in Asia and Chinese New Year, which is an annual shutdown timing, there was a scramble to make sure that people had material and the right material. We quickly got a handle on that just as demand started falling off here because of the government mandated shutdown. So I'll say April was a pretty scary time. April was just an unprecedented reduction in sales, both the depth of the fall off and the speed. But, you know, quite candidly, May was dramatically better than April, and June was dramatically better than May. We're feeling the third quarter will be back to pre-COVID levels, but not to the traditional third quarter that we saw, say, in 19. But a good steady area.
Let me ask you about manufacturing versus outsourcing. It seems like there's been a trend towards more outsourcing. How do you see that playing out?
You know, the way I look at it, Dave, is really in-house versus contract manufacturing. One of the things that we see that in the flooring business, we have a range of maturity in this very dynamic industry. As a old fiber producer, you know, when the carpet industry, the tufted carpet industry was very early, the industry was not highly vertically integrated. So there was a lot of contract manufacturing and a lot of that coordination. We're seeing some of those same things today in the LVT market because it is such a dynamic, fast moving market. So we as the guarantor of quality, though, where we're still driving the branding, the innovation, the design, the quality, the supply chain. So we are leveraging both in-house manufacturing and contract manufacturing to manage this pace of change. And I think that as things become more known, you start to bring more of that in order to control and mitigate supply chain risk, supply chain interruption, try to manage a changing environment with a lower levels of inventory. This is a very exciting time to be in the flooring business, in my opinion.
That's for sure. What about LVT in the future? Do you see more imports of LVT?
Well, what I see is that LVT is going to continue to grow and innovate. You think about where we are with this. You know, it's a very exciting marriage of the aesthetic with the engineered properties. I think that what we're seeing on the surface is products are becoming you know, more beautiful, both if they're fully synthetic or even marrying some natural materials on the face. I think that's going to continue. It's going to get better. I think cores or continue to be more highly engineered to meet the needs, be it sound or be it durability. Certainly water resistance is very important. Installation techniques are going to continue to evolve. So I think what we're going to see is in this cauldron of innovation, we're going to continue to work with our partners wherever they are. Now, we are seeing more movement to the U.S., both with vertically integrated manufacturers and with some of our other supply partners, in order to shorten that supply chain, because the market's continuing to get big. I just think we're going to see a lot of movement. The real issue, I think, more than in-house or outsourced, is about agility, innovation, design, quality, service, and value. And whoever can put those things together will determine where it's going to be manufactured. Certainly tariffs, because that's something that's outside of our control, will impact the pace by which those things move.
It seems like in LVT, every time you turn around, there's a new, you know, a new product, a new approach, and that's got to be difficult to wade through. What decisions to make?
I think it's both difficult and exciting. The exciting part is I think we can really captivate more of the consumer's attention and just really bring excitement to our industry and to the consumer's home and the end user's home. I do believe that the pace of change says that you would naturally want to have a shorter supply chain if you could. As quickly as things change over, if you had a 4-week supply chain instead of a 16 to 20 week supply chain, you'd be mitigating risk differently.
I've got you. Let me ask you about the retail community. I think over the last several years, we've been seeing the independents decrease in number. I suspect that there will be a number of retailers in the floor covering business that will not reopen as a result of this whole COVID situation. What's your take on how this whole community is going to look on down the road, 5, 10 years? Now, I don't know, you probably have a better grip on how many retailers exist out there today, but a lot of people tell me it's somewhere between 8,000 and 10,000, and I suspect if we're talking in 5, 10 years, it's probably going to be, I don't know, maybe half of that. What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, what's the old saying, rumors of my demise have been greatly exaggerated. You know, and I think there are different lines between pure retailers and flooring contractors and things like that. But we certainly have more customers than what you cited. We've actually seen a plateauing of that reduction after the 08. And I'm actually seeing some green shoots of slight expansion in the numbers of customers that we sell to. We are seeing that next generation starting to come in. I am constantly impressed by the entrepreneurial spirit that we're seeing among our customers. I think particularly this younger generation of customers that are coming in are innovating differently. I tell the story sometimes is that if I would have started a business as one of our customers in the heyday of carpet, it would have been Tim's Carpet. And then as hard surface started gaining share, it might be called Tim's Flooring. Today, if my child took over that business, they might call it Tim's Carpet and Flooring and Bath, or Kitchen and Bath, I'm sorry. You know, I think that we're seeing design elements come in. We're seeing that our customers are becoming more heterogeneous. They're innovating. They're doing things differently. That's why I say even what we're calling a flooring specialty store today, we're seeing many of them doing a lot more business to business. We're seeing them expanding into things like cabinets and windows. And I think it's an exciting time. And while there is certainly movement to home centers and big boxes and the internet, I think there's also a deeply local element to our industry. And I think that we're seeing consumers have kind of two competing trends. One is they're looking for efficiency and variety that you get on the internet, but there's also an intense movement back to local. You see it with food, you see it with restaurants. I don't think that people want to live in a community that's been hollowed out and nothing but big box retailers and Amazon shopping. So now that doesn't mean that they're any less demanding. They certainly have high expectations, but we're seeing our entrepreneurial customers pivot to that in a very healthy and exciting way.
One of the things I've seen just from talking to retailers over time, two factors that seem to cause independent retailers to maybe fall by the wayside. And one of those is just internal management, knowing yeah. where the business is and how to go forward and know where you stand. And the second one is digital marketing. And it seems like, at least from numbers I've seen, there's an awful lot of boomers that are still running stores. And I think often they resist like adopting industry-specific software and digital marketing techniques. And I see that as factors that are maybe whittling the numbers down.
I would agree with that. And that's where I say we're seeing some of those green shoots of innovation where that next generation's coming in.
Yeah.
And that's just natural to them. That's just something that they take as a given, that they must operate that way. We're also seeing this connectedness. You know, the biggest use of the internet today is really with pro customers, and this connection between, as they call it sometimes, bricks and clicks. So that customization is what our direct customers bring to the mix.
You see these changes. I mean, it looks like to me the big boxes are gaining share. Independents are losing share. Might that cause some changes at Shaw in terms of products or services or a combination thereof?
Yeah, you know, there's always a healthy mix in our category between both. And we see that mix being different between our hard surface products and our soft surface products. We see that not only the home centers, but mega retailers like Floor and Decor, certain ceramic houses, certain wood houses are hard surface only. One of the things that we've been seeing is there's been a little bit of a resurgence of more exciting carpet products that really is driven by specialty retailers. As we've started to do research, consumer even thinks slightly different about hard surface and soft surface products. Hard surface products are seen as more of a permanent building material with a decorative element. And because of the permanence, they want it to be a little more timeless. Whereas with soft surface, they see it first as a decorative element. And within that, they're willing to take a little more risk. Their expectation for durability is certainly high, but they see it as something that they are willing to change. They see that as a little bit of an advantage. And as an analogy, a little bit different the way the consumer approaches, say, paint versus wallpaper. An advantage of paint is that if you get tired of it, you can change it easily. And we're starting to see some customers circle back to carpet. And actually, COVID is actually putting more emphasis on carpet because of sound. You know, as people are doing Zoom meetings in their home, it's a little bit easier if the kids are in their room playing on a nice, soft, carpeted floor than if they're zooming around in that open floor plan while you're trying to have a power meeting with your boss.
I can see that. It seems like over the years, the relationship that Shaw has had with online players has changed. I mean, just online sales in general have blossomed every year, and I suspect will continue to. What do you see happening there on down the road in terms of Shaw's relationship with online players and selling online?
You know, I think that part of what we're seeing is it's a little bit harder to differentiate these two categories. So let me put the first category, or those very customer-focused retailers that are satisfying how the customer wants to buy and engage through selling online. Many of those are integrated in bricks and clicks. Still the biggest seller of flooring online in this industry are the home centers. And that's a perfect example of how you want that continuity of shopping in that area. We certainly see some people who are making significant investments, and they started on the online side and are backing into a physical. You see places like Warby Parker who are starting to do that. Even Wayfair is starting to open up some physical stores when they started as online only. And so I think we'll continue to partner with our customers to see how they add value. What we will try to weed out are people who try to simply come in and exploit without the investment, use the internet as a way to bootleg product or undercut people who've made a more legitimate investment. So we have to go in and understand the details of what are the practices and also what are the intents. But it's an evolving category, and it's one that I think we have to be really, really working the details and the nuances of as we move through this.
Let me ask you about Shaw's branding strategy and how you see that changing in light of all the changes that we've been seeing.
You know, one of the things that we're really focused on is we are a very direct customer-driven company. You know, we those people that we transact with are our first and foremost. But to serve them well in such a dynamic market, we have to understand what's going on with consumers and end users. So we've invested more than ever in four categories. The first is consumer insights, to try to understand what's driving the consumer and go from insights to actions quicker. The second is brands, because brands are a way for the consumer to understand how to have their intents satisfied. The third is the portfolio of products that customers are looking for. And then fourth is total understanding of installed value, not just wholesale material, but the value that the end user or consumer pays with an installed product. So that's really, as we've moved into that, has really driven us into our current branding strategy, where Shaw Floors is that broad, you know, if it were a car company, you know, it would probably be Volkswagen, let's say, you know, participate in all categories. You know, we then have an AT, which is more focused, has a different target audience, a subset audience. Again, if it were a car, it'd probably be more like an Audi. And then we've got our Cortec, which is a much more specialized, much more faster moving, that it might be a Porsche. If you think about Volkswagen, Porsche, and Audi, the three of those are owned by the same company, leverage a lot of the same infrastructure for efficiency, but tailored to different customer segments. And then a fourth area for us is our commercial products, both our Philadelphia Commercial and Fifth and Main, which if that were, that'd be the truck division of that company, if we're using the analogy of the automobiles. We hope that this makes the customer better able to understand our products and our solutions. One of the things that our research has said is that the customer actually loves our products, our soft and hard surface products, understands that they make a huge value add to their living and working spaces. But quite candidly, they get overwhelmed by choice. They get into paralysis that prevents them from making a confident decision. Sometimes it gets them out of the cycle at all. Other times it gets them to trade down because they don't understand the differences in an environment where they really want to be told how to move up. You know, if you're an Audi buyer, you want to be confident that you traded up to an Audi, not that you got pushed back to a Volkswagen, so to speak.
Gotcha. Let me ask you about trade shows in general. I guess it's ever changing, and it has been for a long time. What do you expect to see going forward? Do you think we'll still see a single major dominant trade show? and there's lots of regionals. They seem to be going strong. What do you see happening in that whole arena?
You know, Dave, you know, first and foremost, as I said earlier, we at Shaw love our customers and we love product. Today, these shows kind of have lumped two of those things together. How do we launch products and how do we build community? And we do those together through a variety of trade show mechanisms. But I think until there is a demonstrated and executed vaccine for COVID-19, the ability to bring large groups together and to have expected results in a safe way is just not prudent, that we think. So what we're saying is, okay, how do we think about those two things? How do we launch products safely, and how do we build community continuously? So what you're going to see from us until there is a demonstrated, executed vaccine is more trying to go to a continuous launch cycle, continue to find ways to build community, probably in events that are smaller than 50, leverage all forms of technology. It is so important that new product continues to come into this industry because it's the lifeblood, as we talked about with LVT, and that continuous cycle of new and improved. But it's also important that we build community. But I think we're going to have to think about how we do that differently until there have been demonstrated vaccines where people can go and feel relaxed, feel comfortable, feel that everybody is operating with the same assumptions.
Last question. The installation segment of this industry has, I guess, been suffering for as long as I can remember. You've probably been suffering longer than that. And we're running out of time here. Just what do you see, how is this going to change, do you think? How do you see this situation improving and what needs to take place for it to improve?
Well, a lot of our installation issues before were recruitment issues. You know, our products are quite installable, though with Broadloom there's some material handling issues. But as our installation community was getting older, the physical nature of some of the products were harder, and with 3% unemployment, we were not attracting that next generation of installers into our community. As sad as it is to say, with double-digit unemployment and the earnings opportunities that you can have in flooring, I think that's going to start to take care of itself. If we look back historically, prior to 08, Dave, there were more small businesses started in the construction industry than almost any other category. People who could start as laborers and then become small subcontractors. And it was just a cauldron of people starting small businesses. After 08, that slowed down because the housing industry was slow to recover and because there were so many other options and because there was, quite candidly, for the last little bit, quite low unemployment. I think that we're going to see two things. One is, without question, the pent-up demand for housing is going to drive this recovery. I think as people see this is a great place to build careers in an environment with, 10% or higher unemployment, I think people will move into these areas and then it'll restart that cycle of starting small entrepreneurial businesses. Those are some of those green shoots that I'm encouraged to start seeing again.
Very good. Tim, thanks so much for joining us. It's been very interesting. I appreciate your time.
But thank you, David, for all that you do in this industry, too. I think it's important that particularly during such dynamic times that we have an ongoing dialogue, and I appreciate you and the other people who take such a conscientious approach to trying to educate our customers and our industry.
Well, thank you much for saying that. I appreciate it. We've been talking with Tim Balcom. He is the president of Shaw Industries, and this is Talk Floor TV.